Ho, 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 everyone. Good afternoon. We're about to start another episode of Chá Pedagógico. So welcome. I'm just waiting for my good buddy, André, to join us online here. Today's our season finale. So, yeah, we're going to have some sort of vacation or holiday recess. A holiday break, actually. So please join us. We're going to discuss every episode we had in the year of 2020, this crazy year. So come on, go ahead, join us, tell your friends, tell your peers. Chá Pedagógico is about to start. We already have like 50,000 people waiting for you. I think he's getting his Santa's hat right, because seriously, this is going to be hilarious. It's becoming a tradition, actually. Every last episode of Chá Pedagógico, we wear the Santa's hat. Decida, hello. Ali, hello. Hello, everyone that's joining us. Please welcome.
Hey!
André! Ho, ho, ho!
What's up, man?
How much, and you, bro?
Look at my hat now. I finally got a proper hat.
Finally. It's about time.
I don't know if you guys remember, last year I actually tried to improvise a hat that looked ridiculous, right? It looked ugly as hell, man. So this one is much better.
Yeah,
I got the proper one out.
It wasn't the best though, but this one looks really cool, dude.
Yeah, this is okay, right? Not as good as yours. Yours is like the real deal, man, but mine is okay.
Well, I got this one when I was in Edinburgh, but I didn't know what was going to happen to my life 8 years ago, but I'm happy that I got this hat. Because this is going to be very useful for this year, for this year's Christmas, since I'm going to have Santa coming for my daughter. So I'm going to lending this hat to Santa when he comes for my daughter. So I'm glad I got this one. So how's it going?
Yeah, it's going to be little Sophia's first Christmas, huh? That's cool,
for
man.
Sure.
Yeah.
Yes, it's going to be my daughter's first Christmas. What about you? How are you doing?
Well, man, you know, things are getting better. We've been working like crazy this year, right? What a year, man. What a year. But I'm doing okay, you know, drinking some tea, just relaxing, talking about stuff that we like, you know. It's been good. Yeah.
You're on recess already, right? You're having the holiday break already, aren't you?
Well, actually, I'm going to start next week, you know. So I still have a couple
next
of days
week,
to do a couple of things.
Tomorrow?
Well, basically, yeah, if I can finish everything that I have to. But, you know, and then we have Christmas Eve, and then I will have a couple of days off, really officially off, right? Till the beginning of January, which is great. So you can get some rest, right? The problem is I have a huge ad, man. And I think this hat here kind of, okay, let's try to make it work. All right, cool. Better now. Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
I was, before you logged in, I was just telling everyone that, welcoming everyone. So welcome everyone that's watching us. This is the last episode of 2020. We're going to have more episodes, but only in 2021, okay? I think I'd like to start off by thanking everyone that's been watching us throughout this crazy year of 2020. I think this year was actually, if there was one good thing about this year, was that this year was good for Chá Pedagógico, since we had and we're still having a pandemic, so everybody has got to stay home. And basically, they had to watch us. So there was no other option.
They had no option, right?
So thank you very much for watching every episode. Today we're going to try to discuss, to recap every episode we had throughout this year of 2020. Thank you so much. And once again, if you've lost any of the episodes, you can find the episodes both here at Machiel Consultoria's account and EDC Rocks account on IGTV. We're also on YouTube. So find Marcelo Consultoria on YouTube. We have episodes there. And we are also on Spotify in the format of podcast. Exactly. You're not going to see our faces, but you're going to be able to listen to us. So find, you can find every episode all in all these channels. So Andre, what awesome. A year you said.
Yes, I mean, I'd also like to thank everyone for, you know, being here for us, you know, like I know it's been a very complicated year for most teachers out there, especially the ones working at regular schools with kids and, you know, like kindergarten. And that was crazy. I've been following, mentoring some teachers who had to go through this incredible transition almost overnight. You know, they had to change everything they knew. So thank you very much for being here with us. And dude, I think, you know what, like you said, they didn't have any other option. They had to watch us. So in a sense, this year was probably the best year in terms of episodes that we made, right? Because we thought of so many different things. So I was just going through everything, you know, Spotify. And then we had, you know, social media. We had adult-child interaction. We talked about the evolution of the learning brain, Paul Howard Jones, right? We talked a little bit about learning science.
Seriously, we had Paul Howard Jones.
That was incredible. That was incredible, really. But I'm really, you know, I know that it's not really right for us to feel, you know, that we've learned so much. I mean, of course we did. I think a lot of people suffered. People have lost their loved ones, you know. But still, there's always something to learn. And I think that we have learned something that we can connect with people even though we are far away. So, you know, me and Rudy here, my bro, we are always talking. You know, he's there, I'm here. We're connecting. We're thinking about stuff that might be interesting, something that you might want to hear about, something you might want to reflect on. And I think we can keep that alive, right? Even though we're not together, we're not close, you know, physically, but we're there. We're sticking to the show, right?
Yeah, and we have never been close before because you live in a different state than me. So that's the thing.
True. We've been close like three times, four times in our lives, you know?
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, of course, we're great friends. I consider Andre one of my big brothers, big, you know, really big brothers, even though I'm a little bit older than him. But he's taller than
just a little.
Like, you know, some inches taller than me. But what you said is really true. Every week we sit down or we get online to think about the best subjects to bring to create an episode. And and I'd like to start off by talking about the first episode we had this year, which was about cognitive bias. We thought about cognitive bias in the very beginning of this whole pandemic here in Brazil, of course. Here in Brazil, the pandemic has started a little bit later, but we thought about this because this was basically, and it's still going on here in Brazil and in many parts of the world. Have the feeling that, whatever happened in the past was better than this one because that worked in the past, this is not going to work now. We have to be very careful with this. This is a cognitive bias that we have. Everybody's got cognitive bias. We have cognitive bias for everything, but we cannot be driven by this bias. We have to have our minds open because if we as teachers think, whatever I did some years ago, that worked. That was better than this one. So I'm not going to do this now. No, don't do that. You have to try. You have to try to apply it. And then you're going to actually see if it works or not. And if it doesn't work, that doesn't mean that we have to throw everything away and that we have to create something from scratch. No, we have to reason upon this. We have to set our butts on this and actually reflect like, okay, so why did this not work? And then you're going to make some upgrades, right?
Yeah, you know, and the thing about cognitive biases is that it's really hard, depending on how rooted they are in our brains, you know, like how deep they are wired into our brains. It's really hard for us to think outside our biases, you know, unless, of course, we have somebody to help us. That's why I really like the idea of having a mentor or a person that you can talk to like we do. You know, sometimes you feel like this should be the way. I read it somewhere. Somebody said something. But then if you don't talk to anyone else who might have a different perspective, you will not know if you are acting on your bias or not. You're just, you know, doing whatever your brain is leading you to do, because that's what the brain does. The brain tries to preserve energy. Mm-hmm. So we kind of fall into those biases, because thinking, you know, deep and in terms of, you know, higher order thinking skills, that actually spends energy. So if you're just on autopilot, right, you don't have to think that hard. That means that your brain is preserving energy. And then, you know what? You're probably making bad decisions about stuff that is new, about stuff that we might have never, you know, come across before, right? So that's why really talking to people. And you know, I remember, dude, I was a huge fan of House, you know, the TV series, right?
Yes.
Because it's based on Sherlock Holmes. And I remember that House was a guy who wanted to keep some people very close to him, his team, right? The team that investigated the case and whatever. And he actually liked the fact that they had different ideas, because that's what helped him get to the solution of the problem, because people were throwing different ideas at him, right? And then he would not fall into his cognitive biases, right?
Yes, yes. We have a comment here from Tab Lucas.
That's Tabitha. Hello.
Tabitha? Yes. Okay. Hi, Tabitha.
Yep.
You're on vacation mode. We're not on vacation mode yet. Only after this episode, then we're going to be on vacation mode. So we have to keep thinking, but until 7-ish. All right. But going back to cognitive bias, we also have to be very careful with this kind of bias, because this is what happens when when our students are developing their second language. The whole process can fall into one of these traps. Because when our students are developing a second language, they already have some concepts. They already have concepts that are already in their minds. And then if we consider, I'm not going to teach my student this because my student is not going to understand something like that. Well, maybe that's not the case. And we also have students who actually think about this. They say, I'm never going to be able to perform like this, or I'm never going to be able to perform at this standard. That's not how it works. So when they're developing this language and they already have this concept, these concepts in their minds, all we have to do is to show them, look, I already know that you have this concept, but look, we have different concepts. I remember in this episode, we talked about the differences between conceptualization and stereotypes. You know, stereotype is something that everybody has. Everybody has a stereotype. This is something that is, it's like the first step. Why? Because when we learn a language, for instance, when our students are learning English, for example, as a foreign language, our students are going to have a stereotype of certain things. New things, of course, or they're going to use their stereotypes. For instance, I know that we use the word mug a lot. That's because we have a mug here.
Exactly.
Because it's, you know, it's easy for us to use.
Shopping logical, right? Mugs. It's what we see right in front of us, a mug.
Yes. It's the first realia that we have at hand here.
Exactly.
Yeah. So whenever students are learning the word mug, for example, they already have the stereotype of a mug, you know, like cylindrical, there's a handle here, people use it to drink liquid, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But then what we can do is to broaden his or their horizons, because we not only have mugs, but we also have cups.
Yes.
And then our students are going to be like, oh, but wait a minute, they're the same. No. So we go from stereotype to conceptualization. We go from stereotype because that's what they have in mind, a cylindrical recipient with a handle, and cups also are cylindrical with a handle.
Yep.
And we expand that.
Exactly.
Also, it's not just a mug. It can be both a mug. It can be either a mug or a cup. And then from that stereotype, they are going to upgrade it to a concept, because then it's not going to be a stereotype is like a one size fits all. And then a concept is like, oh, it's not a one size fits all. So this stereotype, if we keep using stereotypes, even though we are in the presence of different types of conceptualizations, then that's the problem, because that's that becomes a cognitive bias then, because we're going to be like, oh, no, I know that. I already know that. I already know the results that this is going to generate. No, maybe that's not the case. And that's a huge trap we can fall into.
Yes. And you know what? Something came to my mind while you were talking about stereotypes and conceptualizing things. And so I'm going to skip a little. I'm not going to follow the order of
That's okay.
the episodes.
Go ahead.
But this has a lot to do with the evolution of the learning brain and the evolution of language that we discussed. And I think we should start breaking some stereotypes, because our brains are amazing. I don't like to call them machines, because it's a different thing. But they are amazing in terms of acquiring a language, right, and learning a language, because we are born with so much that has been, you know, sort of embedded into our genome over maybe even millions of years, right?
Yeah.
And we can, so very quickly, young children, very young babies, they can pick up stuff that parents and people are saying, and then they acquire language naturally. And then they form stereotypes, right? They form they are born with certain stereotypes of the world, how the world works, you know, the laws of physics and stuff like that. Because, you know, otherwise, if we had to learn all of those things when we were born, it would be impossible for us to develop cognitively. It would take much longer for us to be able to do things, right? But then again, there is a good thing. I mean, having a stereotype means that your brain can sort of fall onto autopilot, right? So you don't really have to make a conscious effort to do whatever it is that you have to do. So whenever you think of a mug, like we said, you know, it's actually quite useful that you have a concept of mug in your brain. That it's kind of something you don't really have to think so much about. It's sort of a concept that is basically autopilot. You don't really have to bring it back, to bring it to the front of your brain, the working memory, to access higher order thinking skills. So that's very important. But that's the same mechanism that makes us, hate one another, for example, you know? Get divided into racial groups, for example, it's the same mechanism, because we attach a certain meaning or value to whatever, to, you know, a person based on the color of their skin or in their beliefs or whatever. And then it becomes autopilot for us, right? Which means we're not really thinking deeply about, we're just, you know, in order to avoid making the effort and spending energy, we're just on autopilot, and then we make wrong, you know, decisions based on those things. So stereotypes are very much connected with biases, but they are also very important for us to make things more automatic in our brains, right?
Yes.
And they are an essential mechanism for language, right?
Yes, absolutely correct. And going back, well, of course, I'd love to talk about cognitive bias again, but seriously, I'm a linguist. I cannot talk about this that much without, relating that to language. So this other automatization is really important when our students are learning, for instance, the simple past with regular verbs, because that's the kind of the kind of stereotype that they're going to have for the verbs. And that's going to be what? An autopilot. It's going to be automatic. It's an automatization that we're having. Whenever they say, I goed, I yeeted, or you know, something like this. Why? Because they acquired that piece of language or that token, you know. So they got that and they thought, whoa, yeah, I got it. All I have to do is put ed or have an ending, an ed ending at the end of at every verb in English. And I'm good. I'm good to go. And that's what basically they do. They create a stereotype for every verb. And they start using, and this regardless of the language, regardless of their age. Really, young learners are going to do this more often than adults. Not necessarily. We're talking about a second language acquisition. It all depends on where the process is. One of the episodes that we're also going to go through a little bit later today. Yeah. We talked about today. Because we talked about this here and we're going through the episode today, is the initial stage of second language learning. The second stage of the second language learning does not hinge on the age of our students. So it's not like, oh, I have 8-year-olds and they're going to generalize this. I have adult learners, they're not going to generalize that. Not really. You know, that's not a recipe. We cannot, we cannot assume that this is what's going to happen. So this stereotype or this bias that we have, it's part of what we do. And that's okay. Definitely. Because from that point on, we're going to be what? We're going to be responsible for making some adjustments only. Like, oh, wait a minute. It's not gold. It's not eated. And then you keep your students or you bring your students back on track, but they're halfway there. That's good.
Exactly. And you know what, man? I was thinking about how much, so all of those things are connected with many other episodes that we discussed, you know, that brought me to social media. We talked about social media, right? And how social media has this algorithm or mechanism that reinforces stereotypes, and then we look at by clicking on stuff, so our clicking pattern becomes part of this huge big data analysis that the Silicon Valley companies own, right? So they have our data, and then they create a stereotype of who we are. They have which can be very accurate because it's based on the stuff that we click or how long we spend, on a particular website or looking at a specific photo or watching a video or whatever. But then at the same time, what we discussed is this is creating this sort of a dystopia that, people are not even able to talk to one another anymore because they're sort of automatically, like put in a bubble, like they belong to a group, they have a label, so that reinforces the stereotype that we have, right? And then you cannot have a normal conversation with those people because then there are so many labels attached to their group that you automatically think, there's no way we can reach a consensus because this guy belongs to that group or whatever. And then again, and all of those things are bound to happen, man, because that's how the brain works. We do that at a brain level. We know we've been doing that forever, and now we have more powerful tools to make it more powerful and bigger. The problem is, and again, we need education, we need, awareness. The problem is that we have to step out of the bubble and think critically about things. And, talk to people again, listen to their ideas. Otherwise, we're going to basically decide things based on stereotypes. And then, we might be wrong because stereotypes are kind of an oversimplification of the reality because the reality is much more complex, right?
Exactly, absolutely right. And I remember that also on this episode about the social media that came up after the Social Dilemma documentary that we watched on Netflix. If you haven't watched it yet, go to Netflix after Chá Pedagógico, go on to Netflix, and then you watch this
Finish here
documentary.
first.
Yes. Stay with us till the end, and then you go to Netflix and watch it since we're all kind of like in this holiday break mode-ish. But I remember we also talked about how important, because you said think critically. This is really important, and our students are only going to be able to do that once we give them opportunities to actually do so in the classroom, or whether the classroom is virtual or physical, because nowadays we've been teaching remotely, and this is like the cue for the next topic, okay? But
Exactly.
this is the cue for the next topic. But we have to make our students think critically, because language is all about thinking critically. And when I say thinking critically, it doesn't necessarily mean that we have to use sophisticated language. A sophistication in the language doesn't necessarily mean a very complex verb tense, for example. No. If we're able to communicate and get the message across and be coherent and use the proper range for that subject, that's already making us think critically. So we have to give our students opportunities for that and in the class. So when we're developing our lesson plan, we have to make use of whether you're using PPP or task-based learning or whatever kind of methodology approach you use with your students. You have to save some time so that your students actually communicate freely, without any monitoring, without any guidance, without anything. Because that's what's going to make them actually think critically with the language, because they'll have to basically, in a very simplistic way, they'll have to, wait a minute, my friend said this, and that. So I understood that. So this is already, higher order thinking, because they are decoding the message. Decoded the message, and now they'll have to create the message that they'll use so that the other person understands and decodes whatever message student B is saying. And this creation of continuation of the communication here, wow, a lot of Asian words here, but anyway, communication, creation, nation, yes.
All
That's
right.
weird. I feel like I'm caroling here. It's a Christmas carol, so I feel like the
It's a Christmas
Grinch.
carol, right?
I feel like the
We
Grinch.
should have rehearsed one to sing together,
Oh my goodness. No. Remember,
Yeah,
I
better
don't
not
remember.
give you ideas.
I think it was Zana from Argentina who told that we should sing some episode. I said, no singing.
Oh,
Maybe
yes.
I can play the harp, you can play your guitar, but never singing. But anyway,
So
so
we're maybe next year, Anna.
no singing, definitely no singing at all. But the thing is, we have to have our students think critically. They'll have to make they'll have to have time to use the language freely, because this is what's all going on in their heads when they
Definitely.
have to communicate. So they'll have to put the words together, but not only put the words together, the right words together. And this is already a complex task. Very
Most
complex
definitely.
task. Very complex task, So this is already critical thinking, because if this the conversation is about, I don't know, which restaurant they'll pick up. Neither students have to or can actually say, I love hot days, because it doesn't make sense. So if one of the students in the middle of the communication or the middle of the task says, oh, but I love hot days, or I love cold weather, this is like, wait a minute, what's going on here? Maybe the student is not actually thinking critically, because if you think critically, and again, this doesn't necessarily mean with with a lot of sophistication, with linguistically speaking. But critically is, wait a minute, we're talking about restaurants, so let's filter, let's focus on
it's really
this
creating,
universe
right?
And not that one.
Yeah. Yeah, like when you said that, it brought me to Maslow's pyramid, right? Because what they are doing there, they're creating. And creating is definitely at the top of the pyramid. That's part of higher order thinking skills. Of course, they have to, you know, they have to remember things. They have to understand, remember, apply, right? And then they can create and everything else. But then I remembered something very interesting. Like there was an ELT conference a couple of days ago that I was part of. And this guy, Peter Ryan, if I forgot his name, I think he's Irish or British, I'm not sure. But he said something that made me think a lot about the way we are teaching language. Think of playing video games, man. Think of playing video games, really. And, you know, we've played a lot of video games, and I'm sure that people have played a lot of games in their lives. And think about teaching someone how to play a game, right? And think about what actually happens when somebody gets a new video game, a new game, right? What do? They try it out. They just go for it. They start playing and they learn by doing. And there is no way you can get a person or a kid for hours and hours and hours and teach them in a very abstract way what they have to do so that they can be successful in the game while they're playing the game. You cannot write a instruction manual for them to read and then go to the video game and play the video game. That doesn't happen at all. And that brought me to IKEA, which IKEA is huge in Europe, in the US. And here in Brazil, we have Tokstok or whatever. And whenever we buy something, a piece of furniture, whatever, for the living room, if you are like me, you're going to take it. You're not going to look at the instruction manual. You're just going to try to assemble it on your own, right? Because it
because
kind
if
of
you
sense.
Use the it's, manual, it loses the fun. Where is the fun of using
exactly.
the manual?
Exactly.
Right?
So you're trying to put together, it's like a puzzle, right? But then even if you look at the manual doesn't have a lot of written text, right? You have a bunch of images kind of showing you what to do. So the manual is kind of like when we're teaching by using chunks, right? Because we have sort of modules or units or blocks of whatever that we need to learn so that we can learn them together. We look at the image, we know where three or four pieces of that piece of furniture go, right? Instead of going like, first you have to pick up whatever, and then you have to screw this, and then you put this in. So this is one of the things that I feel like is going to change a little bit in terms of language teaching. So, because now we have like augmented reality, virtual reality. I think we'll be better able to simulate situations for our students to start using the language and not learning about the language, but learning through the language or with the language by using and then getting a lot of feedback in the process, right?
Exactly. And now this is something that we also discussed in the episode about the difference between online and emergency remote learning. Because when we have an online learning or when we have an online environment, when we think about online learning, we think about the whole thing. We have a holistic view of the online learning from how the students are going to be connected to how the students are actually going to interact to perform a situation, to perform a task. I think this is what we have. This is one of the advantages that we have with online learning, because when we prepare the lesson, I know I've been talking about lesson planning quite a while in this episode today, because this is really important. And then this is one of the things that I also talked about throughout the year of 2020, because this is really important. So when we're developing a lesson for the online environment with this holistic view of online learning, this is one of the things that actually benefit adult learning, because nowadays they're all having meetings, calls, distant calls.
Definitely.
This is one of the simulations that we can use with adult learners. Because they see themselves as in like, oh, okay. So they put in their minds like, okay, so this is like what I did some hours ago, or what was doing some hours ago in my meeting and my call. Whereas when we have a face-to-face situation, this is a little bit harder, because then they see themselves in the classroom with a board, whether it's a blackboard or a whiteboard, but there's a board. It's not necessarily simulating their real life meetings that they have. But this is one of the things that online learning brought to us. And what you
Most
said
definitely.
is totally in favor, or walking hand in hand with usage-based learning, which is something that I've been talking about since 2013. That's when I got my master's, you know. So because
Exactly.
this prefabricate, what you called chunks, I like calling it prefabricated chunks. This is what our students are actually, regardless of their age, this is what they're going to retrieve when they're going to communicate. Because when they need to say, for example, "I'm sorry," do that. This is an experiment for 2021. You guys that have been watching us, whether it's here on YouTube later on or listening to us on Spotify, a very nice experiment for 2021. Okay, so tell your students to say, "I'm sorry," and then tell your students to say, "I'm happy," "I'm sad," "I'm cold," "I'm sick," because the structure is the same. But for them, "I'm sorry" is like one big block. And when they retrieve that, they don't
Exactly.
retrieve "I am sorry." They retrieve the
It's
whole
like a
thing.
one word. It's like
It's like
a
one
one word,
word,
right?
exactly,
Thing, yeah.
like German, like one gigantic word.
Yeah, like a big German word,
Like a big German word, like those
yeah.
gigantic words that they have. That's why
Like, you know,
German's so
numbers,
hard.
you put them all together, like, you know,
Like numbers.
555 is like
Yes.
555 all
And this is
together.
what and this happens in
Yes,
French too. That's why French is also very, very
yeah.
complex and hard. But they retrieve that part. They retrieve that part, no, sorry, that prefabricated chunk. It's the same with
Yep.
"I'm sorry" is the same with "how are you?" And it's the so do this experiment, because they're going to have a hard time saying "I'm sick," but they're not going to have a hard time saying "I'm sorry." "I'm sorry" goes very easily, very automated.
Yeah.
Why?
It should.
Because that's the chunk. They associate that prefabricated linguistic feature with the whole situation. This is really important. This
Definitely.
connection is really important, because that's what we do when we
Awesome.
learn a language. We associate whatever is being said to the whole context. And then we basically say, "Oh, this is what I say in this context. Good, that's what I'll do."
Most
So that's a
definitely.
very nice experiment as well. And it's possible to do that with our students online, because
It is.
it is. But we have to be
Definitely.
careful. We cannot assume that the same mechanism for the same thinking about a task. Maybe the task is the same, but the mechanism has to be different, because we're talking about online learning. So
Yep.
the interaction is different. We have different types of
Most definitely,
accessibility.
man.
It's a different type of interaction as well. So be very careful. Otherwise, it's not going to be
And
online. It's going
this
to
is very
be
important, man.
ERT.
I have to make a comment now because I just realized that you are the angel and I'm the devil. Like, you
Oh
know,
my God, really? That's the
you know, the
very first time I'm
cartoons.
called the angel.
Look at the wall. Your wall is white. You're wearing a white t-shirt, and I'm the opposite. It's like I was actually talking about Freud a couple of weeks ago, and there's the id and the super ego, right? Like the little devil on your shoulder and the little angel, like trying to convince you. So you are the little angel. I'm the little devil today.
Yeah, that's why I
We
have the
did not
locks, you
plan.
know? I have the
So we didn't
locks.
plan exactly. See, you did. We didn't plan that. We didn't plan that. But I just wanted to mention something about, you know, usage based, and so Anna has been sharing a lot of things that Scott Thornberry talked about in a session, I guess, like maybe we should start from the end where students perform and produce, and then we see what happens, and then we kind of give them a lot of feedback. And I think what happens in online teaching or remote teaching. So the very first thing that we have to acknowledge is that online teaching, online learning kind of has its own thing going, right? It's kind of like it's something that has been there for a while, that people have been using for a while. We here in Brazil, like we have educação a distância, so you have a platform, you have the whole, sequence of things that you have to do, how things interact with one another. What we did for at least the first months here in Brazil was not really online teaching. It was remote teaching, right? Emergency remote teaching, because we had to create everything from scratch, basically. A lot of the schools didn't even have a platform. They didn't even know how to use a video conferencing tool or, But then now we had time to adapt. So a lot of schools kind of learned, it's been months now, and they're probably going to keep some sort of blended learning for the next year because the pandemic is not over, but also because there are benefits. So what I wanted to say is, I watched a very cool webinar by Luiz Otávio Barros, who's a very famous author in Brazil. And he said something that I'm also concerned with, that there is a certain, target group, a group of people that we are not catering for their needs because they don't want to learn about the language. They want to learn with the language for a very specific purpose. And maybe they are kind of low middle class, so working class. Maybe they drive, Uber, or I don't know, they work in some sort of industry that, they don't earn that much. They have some money, but they don't want to spend all that much money. And they want to see the results as soon as possible. They want to be able to use the language to talk about the things that are important for them so that they can perform, because they really, they don't want to stay in a course for many years and follow a sequence that was dictated by a big publisher, So so it's not really customized, to their needs, right? And they don't want to go through presentation, practice, production, because, they don't want the teacher to have them elicit, to elicit from them, because that takes time, they want to do something more hands-on, right? So this is what I think is probably going to be a trend now from now on, hopefully, So how do we reach those people, right? What should an English course be like for those people? A course that they simulate situations, they go there, they try to use the language as much as they can, and then they receive a lot of feedback for what they're doing. Kind of like playing a game. Do you remember Crash Bandicoot? Do you remember that game, man? I love that game.
Which one? Which one?
Crash. Remember Crash? The little
Crash. Not really.
fox? Yeah. So
Yeah.
you never, dude, you never, Crash. Do you remember? I remember how I played that game. I died like every 5 minutes I died. But I learned something. That's immediate feedback, You're just trying
Yes.
now. And that's what kept me going, because I wanted to get further and do more. But how do we adapt, right? That's the big problem, because I don't think we can give up many of the things that we are doing. That's the issue here. We can't simply do what they want us to do. We still have to teach grammar. We still have to work on skills. We still
That's
have to,
yes, that's the thing, that's the point. Do we have to? We don't have to teach grammar, because if we teach
Yes, not
grammar, it's,
explicitly, right?
because what grammar is only it's embedded in the language. Grammar is something that we generate by ourselves when we're learning our first language or our native language. Grammar is the rule that mentally we develop, because when we pay attention to whatever a person is saying, we analyze it mentally. Babies, my daughter, my 7-month daughter does that. She's analyzing everything that's being said in front of her, and she's like, Oh, so I have to combine this and that. Oh, interesting. We developed that. Okay, so we developed that. This is going to be very subjective at first. And what did we do several centuries ago? A person said, okay, so since everybody's kind of like using the same set of rules, why not creating a standard rule? And then everybody loved this. And now, oh, let's teach grammar. Well, hold your horses. Maybe that's not the case here because this is something that it's embedded in the language. We can, teaching a second language requires different types of techniques, but we, in this case, we can actually point or just mention, oh, look at this, look at this rule. Great. And let's move on. Let's use the language, you know. But going back to what you were saying, this is why it's so important to understand. This is very controversial, but we have to touch this again. This is why it's so important to understand the learning profiles of our students. This is something that we talked about throughout the year of 20. We're going to continue. This is something that's a spoiler. This is something that we're going to continue talking in 2021 because we still have different other styles that we haven't talked about this year. In 2021, we'll do this. We'll have some episodes on learning styles. But that's why it's so important. But again, that doesn't mean that one student is going to they that one student has a preferable style. No. We have
That's
a
the
mix of
controversial
styles
part,
within
right?
ourselves. We have a mix of styles within ourselves, and we can explore each and every single one of the styles. We have to do that.
And we
The
have
question
to, right?
is, we have to. And the question is, how do we do that? Remote in an online environment. I remember we talked about kinesthetic learning style. How do we have our students actually move? Well, nowadays it's possible. If we talk about young learners, what we can do, tell them to get their webcams or whatever device that they're using a little bit farther from where they're sitting. Have them stand up. Have them use their bodies, you know, gestures and body language and all
Definitely,
these
yeah.
things. We can also
Go
do
get
that as
something in the
teachers.
house, right?
Yes,
Find me
like
something
play a
blue.
game.
Find,
I remember, yes, I don't know, probably for those who are from Brazil and brother, probably you remember that. In the 90s, we had a very, very pop TV show called Domingo Legal. And one of the segments of the show was this, the host of the show, he had a reporter and a cameraman going to some artist's house. And then the host from the studio, he would say something like, okay, now you have 30 seconds and go get me some spoon. You know, this is a great game that we can do with our students in the online
That's
environment.
perfect.
And we also have the language. Some minutes ago, we were talking about this association between the prefabricated language and situation. That's a great thing because then our students are basically going to understand that when I want someone to do something, or when I want to ask something of a person, that's the order, or this is the language that I have to use. That's what we're
Definitely.
doing. And they'll also move. Like, okay, now, student A, you have 20 seconds to get me a comic book. And then student A goes, you know, oh, comic book. All right. Now, student B, you have 20 seconds to go get me some watch. You know, and they're moving. And you're still using the
That's so
language. And they're
important.
using the language. You're giving them the model. You know, and then you can change. This is a twist of the game. Now, student A, think of something and get student B do that. And then student A is going to say something like, okay, student B, go get me some mug. And then student B is going to do the same with student C. And you provide the cue, student B. Now, ask student C
Definitely.
something. That's it.
Yes, I mean, you can make it interactive. And you know what, man? That brings me back to, Paul Howard Jones and learning styles. And if you think about how we evolved, we evolved to move, So why did we stand on both our feet, right? So that we can actually have our hands free to do whatever. So we're always moving in that direction. We're going forward, right? And so learning in the brain and moving, they are intrinsically associated. And that's what we did wrong in education, in our educational system for centuries now, even millennia, you know. We separated learning from movement. We only kept learning and movement in kindergarten, right? Preschool, which, you know, of course, that makes a lot of sense. Kids, they have to learn to, they have to move to learn well. But so do we, you know. So we adults, they also have to move to you know, create intention in their brain to actually go get something so that it means something to them and we can learn more easily. But then again, the whole learning styles thing, basically, it's not that learning styles is a thing in terms of how I can learn best, you know, because that's the impression we have. Mm-hmm. Like, I have a particular or a specific learning style. If I'm taught in that way, I'm going to learn better than if I'm mm-hmm. taught in a different way. What we know from a lot of scientific evidence is that we have to teach the brain in diversified ways. So yes. we have to assume that everybody has all the styles, including kinesthetic, which is moving, right? So if we, that's the thing, when we get to adulthood, right? When we become grown-ups, we have to sit our butts for hours and hours and listen to someone tell us what we have to do. And it's very abstract. Everything is about, you know, learning about the tool and not using the tool. So I think we have to rethink the stuff that we've been doing in English classes and in education as a whole so that we can give adults the opportunity to use the tools. Just give them the tools, demonstrate, you know, model, right? So that's how you use the tool. Now you try. And then you give them feedback. And then you bring a different tool next class. And then a different tool. Because that's part of how the brain evolved, you know? You cannot really separate those things, right?
Yes. Yes. And movement, as you were saying, movement is crucial for language acquisition, whether we're talking about first language or second language. But this is really important.
Definitely.
Why? A couple of months, actually this year, several months ago, I gave a webinar on grammaticalization, how grammar is created, which is, you know, something that I've been studying more deeply. And we developed this through movement. Language is developed through movement, you know, because exactly. for instance, if we have a baby, my daughter, my 7-month daughter, she is watching me get my mug. Let's use my mug again. Okay. So. Yep. She's watching me get my mug and move my mug from point A to point B, okay? I have to be very descriptive yep. here because if you guys are listening to us on Spotify, you don't have the image. But I'm getting my mug exactly. from point A to point B. She's watching me do that. And if I perform some linguistic task together with this movement, so yep. I'm probably going to say something like, okay, I'm speaking out loud. I'm not speaking directly to her, but I'm speaking out loud, kind of like whispering, yeah. you know, oh, okay. Yeah. So, oh, I have to move this mug. Oh, I'm moving this mug once again. I'm moving this mug once again. So yeah. The babies, they're going to see this movement and they are going to be like, okay, they'll kind of like try to get their attention. Mug, because this is something physical. They're not going yep. to pay attention to the word this. They're going to pay maybe yep. this mug, but mug yep. is going to be there. Mug is going to stand out in the sentence, you know, and moving. And then the babies, exactly. they're going to be like, okay, moving. They're going to associate the movement and the verb, you know, yep. and then in some other situation, another person is going to say whatever verb, ing. And then the same baby yes. is going to be like, wait a minute. So every time there is ing, there is movement. Something is moving.
Exactly.
Whoa, I got it. So all I have to do is use ing at the end of a verb. And then I have movement. I got it. And that's, and of course, they're going to make some attempts in using this new feature, and they're going to use this with nouns. For example, they're going to be some, they'll create something like, oh, my daddy's mugging. Not necessarily moving
exactly,
the mug.
Yeah.
My dad's mugging, because the kid associated the entire situation, the mug, you know, and that's to show that how important the movement is in this process of language acquisition. And I guess we only have 5 more minutes.
Yes, and you know what, to kind of give some evidence for what you're saying there, that I read a couple of papers by Curtis, I think her name's Sarah Curtis.
Kelly.
Or
Curtis Kelly?
I don't remember, Susan Curtis maybe, yeah?
No, Susan.
No, Curtis Kelly, yeah, he was one of our guests, you know, in the last webinar of the year, so check out Prestiso YouTube channel. But there is a psycholinguist. And I think, so she was a psychologist and a linguist at the time, 1970 something. And she studied a feral girl, a girl who had been neglected by her dad, who had mental issues. So he kept her locked in the garage because she cried very loud and he didn't like sounds. And so she was never really exposed to language until about 12, 13 years old. Which is what, you know, Lenneberg and even Krashen describe as the end of the period, the critical period, mm-hmm. right? And then they tried to, so this woman, Curtis, tried to teach the language, what would be the first language to this girl. Her name was Jeannie. And then she could not really understand certain features of language because her brain areas, they kind of had matured already or consolidated. But the two classes or features of language that she could still use okay were, guess what, nouns and verbs, because they are very concrete, right? So if you think about it, a noun represents an object or a person or a place or whatever, something that we can actually look at or even hear or, you know, something that exists in the physical world, right? Mm-hmm. And a verb has to do with action or movement or a state of nature or whatever. So those things we can still sort of learn even after we've been neglected or abandoned for a very long time. So then kids will naturally associate those things first because they're easier. But then if you think about prepositions, you know, think about they are very hard. They're very abstract, right? They indicate a relationship between two words or, you know, a direction or whatever. So they're very difficult to grasp. So, but nouns, they're there, they exist, they're physical, they're, you know, or, you know, sometimes a noun can refer to something that is not physical, but it's an idea, it's a concept that exists in the domain of, you know, what we can think of, right? So interesting that you mentioned that. Yeah.
Yes. Well, that comes to the end of the 2020 year.
Yes.
We made it.
I can't believe it, man.
There's been a lot of episodes. So guys, if you missed any of the episodes, YouTube, you can watch us on YouTube, find Marcello Consultoria. We're also on Spotify and IGTV here on Instagram, both on Marcello Consultoria and EDC Rocks. Guys,
all right.
Andre, thanks, brother. This year's been really weird, but really cool.
Yes, dude, it was, you know, as always, a pleasure. We're going to keep bringing a lot of cool episodes about many other things. And please help us, you know, send your suggestions. But we're going to keep Shop Pedagogico alive for as long as we can, right? Because we like to talk about stuff. We like to get together, to drink some tea, talk about language learning, brain stuff, linguistics, and definitely.
Yes.
Thank you, bro. And you know what? When the pandemic is over, I'm going to pay you a visit. We're going to have that bourbon, right? Was it a bourbon or scotch or whatever,
both.
Right? Both. We can have both. Yes.
Both. So
definitely.
Seriously, thank you so much for watching us throughout the year of 2020. You can still watch us. We're going to be on a holiday break for some months, but Shop Pedagogico is returning in 2021. We don't know yet. We'll let you know. In the meantime, follow us here on Instagram, Marcello Consultoria, EDC Rocks. Follow us on YouTube. You can also follow us on Spotify as a podcast.
Definitely.
Happy holidays, brother. Happy holidays, everyone.
Happy holidays.
Happy 2021. Merry Christmas. I hope everything's great.
Yeah.
Much better
than this year. Merry Christmas, everyone. And you know what? Anna and somebody else said we have to sing next year. But okay, I'll do the singing and I'll play the guitar and you play the harmonica, right?
Yeah. I'm not going to sing. Not with this place.
Let's do a Beatles song, man. Something easy. Come on.
All right. Okay, so something easy. Let's sing Happy Birthday.
Yeah. That'll work, you know. That'll work, yeah. Yes. Awesome. Thank you, everyone.
Guys, stay home. Stay safe. The pandemic's not over. Hang in there. We made it to the end of 2020. See you all in 2021. Yeah. Bye, Andre. Bye, guys.
See you, guys. Have fun.